the ego had switched from suspiciousness to viciousness in my own mind. And I am so grateful for that story. I feel like it was a complete setup from the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit had Herb share that story because that was a story that would tell me that my mind was not right right then. That story made no sense to my logic, and I knew something was wrong. Once I was able to see that I was undergoing an ego attack, everything changed. It was a miracle. Now, a different kind of miracle. I did not jump into peace. Okay, I continued to feel like crap all day long. And the ego attack went on all day long. But here's what happened. I shifted from being attacked by my own mind to becoming the observer of the attack. Now, the attack continued for at least 4 or 5 hours after that. And the best way I can describe the attack is that it was like a rapid fire of thoughts through my mind. And it was literally my own mind trying to talk me into quitting this spiritual path. And there were a couple things going on as far as the timing that makes it really interesting. One, I had just finished writing the book of Jude with the Holy Spirit, so the only book that was left was Revelation. I was almost done, and I was going to do my first two live gatherings with, you know, faces in front of me instead of here on Pal Talk. So really, you know, there were a couple things going on there. And boy, the ego just jumped right in there. And what was really great was once I saw it was an ego attack, I was able to set back and literally observe the thoughts. Okay, so notice it's saying here that we don't want to attack back. Once I understood I was under ego attack, I did not attack back. I quit trying to deny the thoughts. I quit trying to look away. I looked right at them is what happened once I realized what was going on. I watched those thoughts in my mind, and I watched them go by. And occasionally, I would share them with Herb, not all of them, or I would have been talking all day. But occasionally, I'd say, okay, Herb, here's a thought I just saw in my mind. And I would share it with him. And I just sat there feeling kind of like a wet dish rag. But I just watched the thoughts, and I didn't believe them. I no longer believed them like I had been earlier. I was just watching them. And what was really going on for me was what I would call patience and this feeling that this too will pass. That sentence was probably the loudest sentence in my mind. This too will pass. And I watched the attack, and I watched the attack. And after the attack, the ego seemed to try two tactics with me that day. The first one was that I was going crazy. That, you know, I had once been a very sane, professional woman in the world, and now I was just going crazy. When that didn't work, then the Holy Spirit, not the Holy Spirit, Holy Spirit is sweet, we're talking about the ego here. Then the ego switched into trying to say, okay, well, if you are going to do this, all right, if you're going to do this, then you might as well really do it, all right? You have what it takes, Regina, to be a great course teacher. You can be as good as you want to be. And it started selling me that. And I did the exact same thing. I was able to remember in my mind, my one true desire is to accept the atonement for myself. And the details of the path that is best for me is totally up to the Holy Spirit. I only want what the Holy Spirit wants. I don't want to slip into wanting anything for me. And I was able to hold on to that and watch all of those thoughts. And the last thought I really remember before coming out of this ego attack, the ego seemed to say to me, it really was, it was like having a voice in my head talking to me. The ego seemed to say to me, if you can't be special, why do it? And you know what? I was able to laugh. I shared that with Herb. I said, Herb, you won't believe what the ego just said to me. It said, if you can't be special, why do it? And I laughed. Now, it probably wasn't a loud laugh because I wasn't feeling well. But I was able to giggle at that. And that was the beginning of the end of the ego attack. So, again, the reason that whole story came up here is because this paragraph 4, sentence 6 says, the ego will attack your motives as soon as they become clearly out of accord with its perception of you. This is when it will shift abruptly from suspiciousness to viciousness, since its uncertainty is increased. Yet it is surely pointless to attack in return. What can this mean except that you are agreeing with the ego's evaluation of what you are? So I think that was just a day that, thanks to that story that Herb told, that I was able to catch on and I was able to shift into merely observing the attack and letting it run its course until it seemed to end. And I, of course, am very, very grateful for that. But that's what this paragraph is talking about. So if that story is ever helpful to anyone when you're under your own ego attack, I'm grateful for that too. Whatever will help you to recognize what's going on and then switch from being attacked into the observer mode and just letting it run its course is wonderful. So are there any comments or questions on paragraph 4 before we move on to paragraph 5? All right then, paragraph 5. If you choose to see yourself as unloving, you will not be happy. You are condemning yourself and must therefore regard yourself as inadequate. Would you look to the ego to help you escape from a sense of inadequacy it has produced and must maintain for its existence? Can you escape from its evaluation of you by using its methods for keeping this picture intact? Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to tell you all my whole life story before tonight ends. But there's another story from my life coming up as I read this paragraph, which I think is a perfect example of this paragraph. When I was younger, teenage years, early 20s, I had such low self-esteem. Now, probably many of you were in the same place, but I didn't know that. I thought everybody else was fine. I thought everybody else had something going for them. Everybody else, had some physical beauty or had some talent or some intelligence or some characteristic that made them really worthy and really special. As crazy as this sounds, okay, Cliff says, heck, I feel like that now. Okay, great. Well, as crazy as this sounds, and maybe Cliff, you'll understand, so I'm about to tell you that you're crazy. I thought that out of 6 billion people, all right, out of 6 billion people, I was the loser on this earth. Me. And it hurt to see myself that way, which is exactly what this sentence says. If you choose to see yourself as unloving, you will not be happy. I was not happy at all. All right? And I couldn't tolerate that. So I decided that I was not going to stay the lowest person on earth. All right? But I didn't know about A Course in Miracles then. So the mistake that I made was I tried to use the ego's method of teaching me that I'm worthy. And I did basically what The Secret teaches us to do, although I didn't know anything about The Secret. But what I did is I went through these girls' magazines, Glamour, Cosmopolitan, 17, whatever. And whenever I saw a picture where I thought, I want to be like that, I cut that picture out and I put it in this book that I had, like a picture album. And I spent hours looking through that picture album, hours and hours for probably 2 years. So this is kind of like the vision board that they talk about in The Secret. And I imagined myself being all of those things in those books, going to all of those places, having all of those experiences, having all of those possessions. Now, at some point, I got busy and I put the book aside. Just like the guy in The Secret, he said he did this too. I kind of put the book aside, and I went on living my life, and my life unfolded. And you know what happened? I began to have successes. I began to go to schools and come out the top graduate. Me, I began to get promoted faster than anyone else. Me. I began to get recognition, that was telling me that I was smart, that I, had qualities that were really special, and I began to be successful. I began to exceed my own expectations of myself. But you know what? Underneath that, I still believed I was unworthy. But this is really denial. I had built like layers and layers of worthiness on top of the unworthiness. And that's not the same thing as letting go of the unworthiness. This is what, you know, we could really call false happiness. So what this means is underneath all of this, house on quicksand. So what this really means is underneath all of this success that came to me, there was always this bubbling. You know, we commonly call that stress in the workplace, right? I'm stressed out. I one of the ways it really manifested for me was in my daughter, because I still believed that I was unworthy, that I wasn't facing it straight on anymore like I was when I was a kid. It was now buried. I became one of those moms who really pushed my child very hard, because really I didn't want, this was all unconscious at the time, but I didn't want her to be as unworthy as me, right? So I had her in dance, I had her in gymnastics, horseback riding, Chinese school, we read every night, we practiced math every night. I mean, our home life, it was like I was a drill sergeant, and she was my only recruit. And sometimes she'd be practicing piano and she'd start crying. Listen to me, okay, you ready? Tell me if this doesn't sound like a perfectly happy person. I'll get away from the mic so I don't hurt your ears. You don't have time to cry. We only got 20 minutes to practice piano, and then we have to go over there and practice Chinese. You don't have time to cry. Stop crying and practice piano. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like happiness to you guys? Now, at some point, I actually found that book again, and I realized that everything in my life came true. And I don't know. It was just like a, huh? Like, oh, well, it all happened. And somehow, I didn't really come in touch with the fact that my unworthiness was still underneath, but there was this emptiness feeling. Emptiness is the only way I can describe it. I had achieved everything I had set out to achieve, which was supposed to make me right on top of the world now. I was supposed to move from the bottom of the world to the top of the world. I mean, I'd achieved everything. I lived in the town I dreamed of living in. My daughter went to the school I dreamed of her going to. Everything. I had the company I had picked out that I wanted to work for and the job in that company that I wanted. I had everything. And I felt empty. And it was about 4 months after this emptiness feeling came along. Oh, you guys know what happened next. That I found A Course in Miracles. Actually, I already had it. It was in my house. I just hadn't been reading it. And about 4 months after this emptiness feeling came up, I remembered the book. And I didn't even draw a direct connection. It wasn't like I remembered the book because I felt empty. It wasn't that direct. But it was just there. And I started reading A Course in Miracles. And in fact, somewhere in A Course in Miracles, it told me I wasn't happy. I was so far into denial, in fact, of the screaming I just demonstrated to you all, I was so far in denial that when I read in A Course in Miracles that I wasn't happy, I didn't believe it. I thought A Course in Miracles was lying to me, because I'm happy now. Damn it. And what happened for me is I started reading A Course in Miracles. At some point, I started giving my willingness to see that I was wrong. And this is when I started seeing how unhappy I was. This is when I started noticing me screaming at my daughter. This is when I started noticing the stress at work. It's like all of the unhappiness that was always there that I wasn't looking at began bubbling up. And I know some of you all have heard this story before, but there was that one beautiful morning, which really looked ugly, but it was a beautiful morning. It was an October morning. It was the first cool morning of the year. And anybody who has kids probably knows that kids aren't real excited about that first day that they have to wear a coat, right? Well, it was that first cool morning in October, and I wanted Jasmine to wear a coat to school, and she didn't want to. So we're standing there at the bus stop. Now, I didn't scream out loud there because there were other parents around. So I didn't scream out loud. I just kept saying, Jasmine, you need to put on the coat. And she's like, no. And I'm like, Jasmine, it's cool. You have to put on the coat. No, come on, Jasmine, put on the coat. And, eventually I won and she put on the coat and left on the bus. But after she left, what I realized, because A Course in Miracles was helping me see this now, is that I was completely enraged on the inside. I was just enraged that Jasmine did not just take that coat and put it on. So I decided to look at that, and I, asked the Holy Spirit to join me so I could figure out why I was so angry. And so I started asking myself some questions. And I asked myself, Why were you so upset? And the first answer that came to mind was because Jasmine wouldn't put on her coat. So I said, okay, well, why did that upset you? And, well, I have this all written down. I don't have a good memory. I should have printed it, but I didn't know I was going to talk about it. But basically the questioning kind of went to where I, at some point, I realized that the real reason I wanted Jasmine to put on a coat is because I was embarrassed about the thought of her showing up at school without a coat. I was worried about what her teachers, her principal, and the other mothers would think of me if my daughter showed up at school without a coat. And when I realized that that was my underlying reason for being upset, it wasn't because I was worried that my daughter would be cold. It had nothing to do with concern for my daughter. It had everything to do with me trying to continue that mask, I am worthy, when in reality, I believed that I was not. That's what was really going on. I really still believed, in spite of my success, in spite of, you know, how many people seemed to admire what I had achieved, I still believed that I was the lowliest of 6 billion people on earth. And that is why I wanted my daughter to wear a coat, because if she showed up at school without a coat on a cool October morning, somebody might figure out that I'm the great loser on earth. And that was just the beginning of me looking very, very honestly at just how unworthy I still believed I was. And, you know, that's a long story, but that's what this paragraph is talking about. Paragraph 5. It says, would you look to the ego to help you escape from a sense of inadequacy it has produced and must maintain for its existence? I was trying to use the ego to make me worthy through all of that success. That was impossible. All that did was push my unworthiness further and further out of my awareness, deeper into denial. So I had to work a little harder to get back to it. And I had to get back to it, because you have to get back to it in order to let go of it. You cannot heal that which you deny. You can only heal that which you admit to. Okay, I hope I didn't hurt your ears when I was yelling. But I just wanted to show, because I think that's a real picture of what was going on. That's a very real picture of what was going on at the time. So let me continue then with paragraph 6. You cannot evaluate an insane belief system from within it. Its range precludes this. You can only go beyond it, look back from a point where sanity exists, and see the contrast. Only by this contrast can insanity be judged as insane. With the grandeur of God in you, you have chosen to be little and to lament your littleness. Within the system that dictated this choice, the lament is inevitable. Your littleness is taken for granted there, and you do not ask who granted it. The question is meaningless within the ego's thought system, because it would open the whole thought system to question. Well, to be honest, that's what happened to me that cold October morning when Jasmine would not put on a coat. What an angel she is for saying no, huh? I mean, once again, we're seeing a brother offering me to accept the opportunity, accept the atonement for myself. She offered me that opportunity in her stubbornness to put on that coat. And what happened that morning was the entire ego thought system opened up to questioning for me. That was the beginning of healing for me that morning. And what really happened when I went back to the car and when I decided to look at that instead of just accepting my anger, in looking at that, I joined with the Holy Spirit. So I actually stepped temporarily outside of the ego thought system and joined with the Holy Spirit and said, what happened there? And that's why I was able to discover my unworthiness and look at what happened without feeling guilty. There was zero guilt that morning in spite of the ugliness that I saw within me. There was zero guilt because I was joined with the Holy Spirit in looking at it. It was just a discovery. It was just a discovery is all it was. And in fact, in spite of the ugliness of the discovery, it felt good to see it. Let me see if I can describe that. It felt good because it was the beginning of the end. It's like, you know, if you were the princess and the pea, because in a way I was. I had built all these mattresses over the unworthiness, so it's like the princess and the pea. If you're the princess and the pea and you can't sleep and you can't sleep and you can't sleep, then one night you find the pea that's keeping you awake, you're happy to find the pea because now you can get rid of it. That's what happened for me. I was happy to find that ugliness and unworthiness. There was no guilt because now I could allow the Holy Spirit to help me start letting go of it. If I had never found it, I couldn't let go of it. But in order to do that, if you're ever looking at your ugliness and you're feeling guilty, then what's really happening is you're looking at it with the ego. So in that moment, realize that's what you're doing. And stop and say a prayer and ask the Holy Spirit to join you in looking at it because your purpose is healing. And whenever you look at it with the Holy Spirit, with the purpose of healing, if the purpose of healing is in your mind, even if you didn't say a prayer, you have joined with the Holy Spirit. If the purpose for looking at it is healing, you've joined with the Holy Spirit, and there will be no guilt. There will just be that feeling of discovery, that feeling of purpose, and that willingness to uncover, let go, and heal. Paragraph number 7. I have said that the ego does not know what a real question is. Lack of knowledge of any kind is always associated with unwillingness to know, and this produces a total lack of knowledge simply because knowledge is total. Not to question your littleness, therefore, is to deny all knowledge and keep the ego's whole thought system intact. You cannot retain part of a thought system because it can be questioned only at its foundation. And this must be questioned from beyond it because within its foundation does stand. Now here we go. We're talking about option A in this next sentence. The Holy Spirit judges against the reality of the ego's thought system merely because he knows its foundation is not true. Therefore, nothing that arises from it means anything. He judges every belief you hold in terms of where it comes from. If it comes from God, he knows it to be true. If it does not, he knows that it is meaningless. So really, we talked last night about how the Holy Spirit is option A. The Holy Spirit knows the separation literally never happened. We are still perfect. We are still one, even right here within our perception of this illusion. Right now, we are perfect and we are one. And this is what the Holy Spirit knows. And so the Holy Spirit knows that since that very first thought, the thought that I could be different from God, since that very first thought is wrong, because it's impossible, every single thought that came out of that is also wrong. And in fact, unworthiness, which is the one I used in my example, is completely wrong. And if you think about that logically for even a moment, and by logically, I mean with the Holy Spirit. I'm not talking about the ego's logic here. I mean join with the Holy Spirit in option A. And think about this logically, all right? The separation never happened. You are one with God, which means you are the same as God. When your mind is there, can you possibly be unworthy? Can you possibly be unworthy? If everything is the same, and by that I mean one, there is literally no separation and no difference. That's how the Holy Spirit sees completely. Option A, everything is exactly the same. How can any part of it be more or less worthy than another part? The Holy Spirit has absolutely no belief in your unworthiness because it's impossible. It is impossible from the Holy Spirit's point of view. And when we join with the Holy Spirit helps us to see that. Now, admittedly, from my own experience, I didn't see it that clearly immediately. But let me just go ahead and tell you what did happen for me. I described that morning in October when Jasmine wouldn't put on her coat, and I discovered the reason I was upset is because I didn't want anyone else to see how incredibly unworthy I believed I was. But what happened after that was literally a couple months, because I didn't get it from learning just one lesson. What happened after that was a couple of months of looking at all of my upsets and doing that same process, joining with the Holy Spirit and then asking, okay, why am I upset? And I would go through situation after situation after situation and keep coming back to the same thing. It's my unworthiness that I'm afraid other people are going to find out. I kept coming back there. And after I came back there for like the 24th time, I started being able to laugh at it. Ha, 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 there's the unworthiness again. But what also happened as I did this is I unconsciously, okay, this wasn't conscious at first, but I started seeing all of the defense mechanisms that I used to hide my belief in my unworthiness from myself because I didn't want the pain of knowing it. Now, I wasn't aware that in all of these stories that I was seeing these defense mechanisms, but that was what was happening. And then one morning I was just laying in the bathtub, kind of doing nothing, you know, nothing with my mind, and all of a sudden I saw this map in my mind. And in fact, I shared that map the very first time I ever taught on ACIM Gather in April of 2005. But I saw this map in my mind, and it was a map of my ego. It was a map where I saw at the very bottom, it was an animated map, and I saw this little mouse standing up on 2 feet in a suit dressed like a gangster from the 1920s, and he had this huge mouth with sharp teeth. And he was standing there screaming, "You're guilty. You are so guilty. You are guilty." And that's all he did was stand there and scream that. And then on his left and his right were these two big goon-looking guys. They were monster goonish. They looked, you know, dumb but strong. You know the type? They didn't look smart at all. Dumb but strong, kind of goonish. And they were also dressed like gangsters. And they had these ancient-looking black machines with these cranks on them. And one of the machines was, I knew, fear. It was a fear machine. And the other machine was unworthiness. And they were cranking these two machines. And as they cranked these two machines, the smoke came out. Now, the smoke, the purpose of the smoke was to hide the goons, the machines, and the mouse from my awareness. That was the purpose of the smoke, was to cover them up so I wouldn't know that they were down there. All right? And out of the smoke, I saw all of my defense mechanisms. I saw that, you know, the thought of being victim, you know, I'm the poor victim here. That was a defense mechanism. Again, I didn't know I was going to talk about this, so I didn't print the maps. I don't know if I can remember them all. But, you know, obviously the idea that I am better than others, that was one of the defense mechanisms. The attempt to control things and make things my way, that was one of my defense mechanisms. And I don't remember off the top of my head what they all were, but they all came out as this smoke so that it would cover up these three things at the bottom, guilt, unworthiness, and fear, so that I didn't know those things were there. Well, I got right out of the bathtub, and while that was fresh in my mind, I literally drew a map. And I took that map that I saw, and I pasted it up by my computer at home, and I pasted it up by my computer at work. And then what started happening was when I got upset, I no longer had to go through this process of why. I was able to look right at that map. I was able to tell what defense mechanism I was using right now, instantly. I began to instantly catch on to myself. That's literally what I did. I started seeing all of my defense mechanisms while they were in action. And what happened as I did that is they began to not work anymore. Because the purpose of a defense mechanism is to hide whatever it's hiding. And if you're onto the defense mechanisms, they can't do their job. So when the defense mechanisms weren't able to do their job for me anymore, the unworthiness started coming up. And for me, this was an experience of like having Pandora's box open. What literally happened, since I was unable to hide it from myself anymore, is this self-hatred started coming up. And it started coming up with a roar. Now, this was not in any way what I would call a pleasant experience. But it was what I would call a bearable experience. And the reason it was bearable is because I was joined with the Holy Spirit. I was doing it for the purpose of healing. And in fact, just a couple weeks ago, the Holy Spirit showed me that the only difference between depression and healing is which interpreter you're looking at the experience with. That in effect, what's happening is the exact same thing. What was happening for this healing for me when this unworthiness was coming up is that since it was no longer denied, it was like this dark, dark filter of self-hatred covered my eyes. And the difference between depression and healing. So literally what happened is this self-hatred started coming up, is it was like this dark, dark filter was put in front of my eyes. And I literally saw everything during this time through this dark filter. So, for example, when I went to work, even the people that I had always felt really liked me and were on my side, during this period of time that the self-hatred was coming up, I looked right at them, and I swear to you, it looked like they hated me. It looked like they had always hated me, and they just couldn't hide it anymore. In my mind, there was this thought, that we call the Holy Spirit, that kept reminding me that what I was doing was healing. Yeah, both things were in my mind, Robert, the dark filter and the thought. And in fact, the thought that kept telling me that I was healing is what made the entire experience bearable. If I had not had that thought in my mind that I am healing, I would have experienced what we call depression. Because depression is when that dark filter, depression is when your defense mechanisms aren't working. It's when that dark filter is coming up, it's right in front of your face, but you're believing it. All right? The thought in my mind that reminded me I was healing kept me from believing it. So I had the exact same experience, but I was able to bear it. I was able to observe it, rather than spiraling down with it. And what I mentioned, which I don't know if you all heard, was that what this really felt like for me was this almost, the self-hatred almost felt like an actual thing, kind of a gassy thing within me. And it felt like it was rising up from my guts, and it went up through my chest, up through my head and mouth. It had this, I could actually taste it. It had this awful taste, and I could feel it coming up through my mouth. And then it seemed to leave me two ways. It seemed to like evaporate out the top of my head, or I could actually breathe it out. When I felt that taste in my mouth, I would just kind of let my mouth hang open, and I would kind of go, and I felt like I was just expelling this gas. I mean, this had a very strong feeling about it. But again, I was able to bear it because of the thought of healing. And that, again, is how you know if you're joined with the Holy Spirit or not. I remember literally thinking while I was going through this that I would not want to encourage anyone to go through this before they were ready, because I thought that the experience was so strong that it could drive you mad. That was literally what I thought. This could drive you mad if you weren't ready for it and didn't know what was going on. So that's how I really know that the Holy Spirit was with me. And I felt every bit of the experience, but at the same time, there was this knowing that it wasn't real. There was this knowing in my mind that it wasn't real. It wasn't real. I didn't have to believe the self-hatred. I didn't have to believe the hatred that I saw in the world. I just had to let it pass. So that's what this last paragraph that we just read reminded me of, because the Holy Spirit is the one that knows that the entire experience is unreal because its foundation is unreal. And that thought, that Holy Spirit was in my mind, and that's what allowed me to get rid of, if you will, to clear out this big chunk of unworthiness. Now, I don't want to pretend like I don't see unworthy thoughts anymore, because they do still pop up. But this was like a great big old chunk that had to get out of the way. And now the thoughts that come up, I'm able to release much easier. But that big old chunk just seemed to be really blocking everything within me. And getting rid of that big chunk of unworthiness was a really important first step for me in the healing process. So I'm just going to let go of the mic for a second and see if anybody has any questions or anything before we continue. Okay, I did see a question before I was locked up where somebody asked, how do I see my defense mechanisms? For anybody who still feels they want to go through this healing experience and they haven't, you know, I believe the only thing you can really do is just keep telling the Holy Spirit that you want this, because that's what I did before this happened. The Holy Spirit was telling me I wasn't happy. I believed I was happy, remember, but I started telling the Holy Spirit, okay, I'm willing to see that I'm wrong. If there's something, if there's something I need to see, show it to me. I'm ready. I want to heal. Show me. And that's when this whole thing started happening. So you ask the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit will bring you the experiences that you need when you're ready to face them. Cliff, please go ahead.
Thank you, Regina. Awesome subject, as always. Awesome talk. I'm talking about uncovering the defenses of the belief of self-hatred. First of all, I give you a lot of credit for sharing that. How many people, well, I should speak for myself, would be willing to admit that I have any self-hatred? Because, you know, it's like taboo in the world. It's like, oh, you must, you know, if you did admit it, it's like, oh, there must be something wrong with you. Nobody wants to admit it. And so I'm so glad that you're talking about this. I see for myself, And I think it's the same thing, generally speaking, of defense systems, where when I start to get close to the truth of something, close to discovery, I will have a tendency to get busy, to get distracted, like to have to be multitasking, or I have to go, you know, do this or do that, or nothing really constructive, just some kind of random busyness to keep me distracted. I think that's one of my defense systems. Thank you.
Yeah, that is a defense system. That is one I recognized in me also. That actually comes, remember there were two machines inside of me that were pumping out defense mechanisms in my little vision. One machine was unworthiness, the other machine was fear. That defense mechanism that you just described comes out of the fear machine. It is afraid to look beneath those clouds. And the reason it's afraid to look beneath those smoke clouds is because it believes that what's down there is true. And so it doesn't want to look. In other words, you know, you're really afraid to look honestly at your self-hatred because there's still a belief in your mind that you deserve every bit of self-hatred that's down there, that you really are the lowest of 6 billion people on earth. That belief is still in your mind. So really what that means is you're kind of looking at your unworthiness with the ego, because the Holy Spirit doesn't believe your unworthiness for a minute. So it's the ego that it's being looked at with, and that's why the fear is there, and that's why the desire for distraction comes up. So what you really want to do is just spend a lot more time with the Holy Spirit in prayer, saying, Holy Spirit, I know it's important for me to look at my unworthiness and let it go. I'm really afraid, and I'm asking you to help me with this. Lead me in a way that is just right for me. I remember praying those exact words. Lead me in a way that is just right for me. Lead me in a way that won't scare me so that I'll turn and run. I remember praying those words. I had forgotten that, but it's all coming back. Lead me in a way that will not terrify me. And, you know, actually the Holy Spirit answered my prayer, right? Because it came to me, it started coming to me on an October morning in a disagreement with my daughter about a coat. It started coming to me in a way that didn't terrify me, and it enabled me to look at it. So I had the desire to look at it, And then I prayed for the Holy Spirit to bring it to me in a way that wouldn't terrify me. And it did unfold that way. Everything will come to you through your desire. So, yeah, just keep working on that. Can I pray while I'm working or doing something? Yeah, absolutely, because you don't have to get on your knees, close your eyes, or anything. You just have to say it very quickly. You can even just say, I want help. The Holy Spirit knows all the words behind that. I want help. I need you to help me look at this. Anything little like that, just a thought in your mind will work. And if you're very, very consistent with the prayer will be answered, and it will be answered in an absolutely perfect way for you. Okay, tell you what, why don't we read the next paragraph, paragraph 8. Whenever you question your value, say, God himself is incomplete without me. Remember this when the ego speaks, and you will not hear it. The truth about you is so lofty that nothing unworthy of God is worthy of you. Choose then what you want in these terms and accept nothing that you would not offer to God as wholly fitting for him. You do not want anything else, which means you do not want that thought of unworthiness. Return your part to him, and he will give you all of himself in exchange for the return of what belongs to him and renders him complete. Now, this, of course, is metaphor, because this is talking about return yourself to God. That's only talking to your perception that you're separate. In truth, you aren't separate. In truth, you aren't. But because we believe that we are, the Holy Spirit talks to us using what I call crazy dream talk. So that really all the Holy Spirit is doing in this paragraph is massaging our own willingness. He's just kind of massaging our willingness a little bit, because our willingness will grow and our willingness will respond. And as our willingness grows and responds, it will bring to us those experiences that we truly want for healing. So really that's all the Holy Spirit is doing here, is massaging our willingness a little bit so that we can accept that desire to heal within our heart. And that is it for chapter 9. I in no way, David, feel like starting grandeur versus grandiosity right now. It's 10:21. So what I would like to do instead is get with you later and figure out another time when I can come back and finish this reading assignment, if that's all right with you. But I think tonight's discussion on the two evaluations has been perfect. And really what we're talking about here, if you want to get down to it, is whether we're going to be humble or haughty. Are we going to be haughty enough to say to the Holy Spirit, yeah, you say I'm perfect, but I know better. I'm as unworthy as hell. Or are we willing to maybe trust the Holy Spirit a little bit? In fact, that's another idea that has helped me through the healing that I've undergone so far, is that when I really was believing my unworthiness, I was willing to trust that the Holy Spirit's evaluation of me was more true than my own. Remember what the Holy Spirit said to me, you are perfect. To trust this is to trust me. And when the Holy Spirit said that to me, that created a little shift in my mind, because I was wanting to trust the Holy Spirit. So then whenever the thought came up in my mind that I was not perfect, I was willing to look at that thought and say, yeah, but I can either believe that thought or I can trust the Holy Spirit. And that allowed me to start letting go of those thoughts in my mind, because I was choosing to trust the Holy Spirit. That was what I wanted. And that's really the moral of the story in the two evaluations section. You have two evaluations of yourself in your mind. Which one are you going to choose to trust? It's the only question we need to ask ourselves. Any closing comments or questions on the two evaluations? Cliff, please go ahead.
Yes, Regina, the story that you were telling about when the people walking and waving at the golf course, and your ego said, run, Regina, run. What was the turning point? You might have said, but I don't remember. What was the turning point? When did you choose which teacher? Like, what was there inspiration or a knowing, or how did that pan out, the choosing?
Yeah, it was just a realization is how I'll describe it. Because like I said, in that particular story, what the ego was showing me, there was literally a picture in my mind as Herb was telling the story, because I seemed to have a very visual imagination. So as Herb was telling me the story of him and Lisa sitting on the bench waving at people going into the party, there was this picture in my mind that showed Lisa and Herb as completely insane. And it showed it as if every single person walking into that party knew they were insane. It was probably like trying to walk on the opposite side of the sidewalk so as not to have to get close, maybe trying not to have eye contact with them. You know, that's the way the ego was showing that to me. But it must have been the Holy Spirit that snuck in my mind, because the thought that literally came in my mind that woke me up in that minute was, you wave at people all the time. And I do. I wave at people all the time. And I have my whole life. And when that thought came into my mind, you wave at people all the time, I realized that the way I was seeing was insanity. I wasn't looking at insanity. The filter through which I was looking was insanity. And that's when I realized that I was undergoing an ego attack. So it was literally for me that thought. So again, we're talking about the Holy Spirit reaching me in a way that would have helped me. Just like the way I was able to look at my unworthiness was through a situation with my daughter in a coat, the way I was able to see that I was under ego attack was with that thought, you wave at people all the time. So the Holy Spirit is able to help us in whatever way works for us, as long as we continue to give our willingness to the Holy Spirit. I'm live right now. let's see. Dove, I saw you. Which Robert Mills has cut you off. Robert, please go ahead.
Thanks, Regina. Thanks for sharing your openness and your demonstration. is wonderful. And as I was sitting listening, and click, you know, and answering and asking his questions and such, it came upon me that you are sharing your experience, and I sit here. And I listen to your experience, and I can experience the collapsing of time and the paving of the road and pointing to the reality is I can listen to your experience or I can have one myself with Holy Spirit. And I think this is what really drives it home for me is choosing to follow Holy Spirit, to be led into my own personal experience as to the question and the answer which will come up from within me. And it is my endeavor to experience the peace of God with the Holy Spirit in the stillness that I provide, in quieting my mind and allowing that to happen, which you have paved the road for that in itself to be experienced. But I must do that, or I can choose not to. So I think that's it's wonderful. I just wanted to add that. Thank you very much, Regina.
Thank you, Robert. Yeah, that was perfect. Dove, did you have something you wanted to say? I saw your hand up a minute ago. Please go ahead.
Well, it's funny you say that, Regina. I did have my hand up. The funniest thing is that when Robert Mills just shared, I realized that Holy Spirit is saying, share what you want to share right now, because it really shouldn't wait at all, because what Robert just said was the same thing that I was going to say, taking something from tonight's reading of the two interpretations. There was this portion from earlier saying the ego is therefore capable of suspiciousness at best and viciousness at worst. And most of us who do the course certainly know that particular line. We use it a lot almost every single day. It says this is its range. It cannot exceed it because of its uncertainty. And it can never go beyond it because it can never be certain. You know, what Robert Mills just said, you know, it's one thing to hear you with the certainty that you're having in your experience, and, you know, the room is filled with people who love to hear and they can all relate. But, of course, I've been sitting in this room for a number of years now, and, you know, the same questions keep coming up over and over and over. And, of course, the questions are always of the ego. The Course tells us that questions are always of the ego. And it's because the ego lacks, you know, the whole idea of the ego would never even be there if we didn't lack love, if we didn't believe in the lack of love. And it's out of the lack of love that the ego took on the function of, okay, you know, I'll find the answer, I'll get it for you, you know, I'll seek and find it for you, you know, seek and do not find, but don't worry about it, I'll find it sooner or later. Well, you know, you can hear somebody talking about their experience, and the Course is really not about the concepts. You can read the concepts, you can listen to Ken Wapnick CDs morning, noon, and night for years, and it won't mean a thing to you. It may sound like it's meaning, yeah, you can say, geez, it changed my life. But until you have the absolute certainty of having the experience that Holy Spirit is giving you personally, there's nothing certain, because it tells you right there. It says the ego, which is what we are when we don't know who we are, it can never go beyond it because it can never be certain. Interesting story. 25 years ago, I happened to pick up a copy of Scientific American, and that's about, you know, kind of as unusual as some of the things that you talk about, like these things never happen, and all of a sudden, you know, David called you and tells you to come to the room and say, geez, I never do that, but it happened. So I pick up this copy of Scientific American, and I'm reading this article by a mathematician who said, you know, there is not enough people on the planet, talking about 6 billion people. Maybe in those days it was only 5 billion, I don't know. Is that enough people on the planet to give you certainty on any question that you may ever ask? You can ask the question, am I lovable? Do you love me? But there's never enough people that will ever give you certainty for that. And I don't know how he was able to put that in mathematical terms. Of course, he is the mathematician. I'm not. But that's really the same thing when the ego asks questions. You can ask questions morning, noon, and night. But until you have the certainty of the experience, and exactly what Robert Mills said, and it's what Jesus says to us, says, don't get caught up in the concepts and the rituals. You know, this is not a philosophical speculation. I'm not even interested in precise terminology. Use it to go beyond it, to have the experience yourself. And as much as that it's an encouragement and gives you hope, yes, there is hope, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Until you experience it directly and have the direct experience of the Holy Spirit through you, speaking to you and recognizing that I need do nothing, that everything is done through me, and I can share it, and I can be a teacher of God right here in this room. There is nothing more powerful and more certain than that. Until that time, you're listening, you're watching a movie and say, yeah, I like the movie, I like the movie, I like the movie. But until you actually experience it, it's just another movie. I just wanted to share that, and it's really in tonight's reading, because it's not only about suspiciousness and viciousness, it's that the ego can never go beyond uncertainty, because that is where it lives. It lives in uncertainty. Uncertainty is of the ego. Certainty comes from direct experience. Thank you so much.
Yeah, David, that reminds me of the conversation we were having Friday morning in Awakenings, where we were really talking about, of course, that I don't know is such an important set of words. You know, and by I don't know, I mean turning off the thinking mind. So, for example, the Course can seem to be quite complicated, and when we're reading the Course, we can come across sentences in the Course that we want to try to figure out. And even trying to figure out actually comes from the I know mind, because there's a thought there that I do know stuff, And if I work really hard, I can understand what this means. But really, it's much better just to say, I don't know what this means. And of course, I know a lot of people here in the room know I do this. If I come across a sentence in the course that doesn't make sense to me, instead of trying to figure out what it means, I just say, I don't know, and I ask the Holy Spirit, and then the Holy Spirit explains it to me in a way that, you know, I never would have gotten at. So, you know, this really is about laying down the thinking mind, laying down the I know mind, and allowing the Holy Spirit, which is our knowingness, to fill us with whatever is helpful. Dave, please go ahead.
Yeah, the amazing thing is that all during the spiritual adventure, the spiritual journey, as it were, the ego likes to go on that journey because it's a journey of time. It's a journey of saying, I don't know, and I'll discover if I can just get enough information, I will know enough to be enlightened. And the funny thing is, that person that is searching, that person that is seeking, that person that wants to become enlightened, is exactly what has to get out of the way. And that is really another headbanger. The one that wants to know, which is the ego, has to get out of the way. And so that the one who does know, the one who is the one, is revealed. So and so it's one of those conundrums that come up in the spiritual path when you realize the guy that's seeking is a guy that's never going to find, because it's the ego that doesn't understand it needs to understand, but its very nature is to not understand. And yet it's cunning enough to say, well, I'll spend a lot of time looking, I don't mind. And of course, as we all know, the ego's whole thing is to search and not find. So, great stuff.
Thank you, Dave. I was just thinking. I use the example, "Do you love me?" That was the example that the mathematician used. He says, you know, you can go and each person that you ask, "Am I lovable? Do you love me?" You always need one more person to ask. You know, to check that person out for certainty, because you're never really certain. But that's on being lovable and do you love me. How about you are the Son of God? You can read I'm the Son of God whole, healed, and complete a million times. You can literally have someone in this room telling you, you are the Son of God. You are God. Nowhere does it say that God ends and the Son begins. You can hear that a million times, and it means nothing to you until you experience it. That's why getting caught up in the concepts and the rituals of the Course is not what the Course is about. And that's, by the way, where we got the idea for the 12 Simple Themes, which, by the way, Holly and I are doing this Friday, Professor Friday. We're putting it to music. Holly's guidance on music and the 12 Simple Themes. All are invited. Turning this mic back to you, Regina.
Actually, Cliff has his hand up, so go ahead, Cliff.
Yes, thanks for that. That brings some more clarity. The getting caught up in the concepts and the questions and the figuring out in itself is a defense mechanism. Thank you.
There you go, Cliff. Ask and you will receive. You've uncovered two defense mechanisms since 30 minutes ago when you said, how do I identify my defense mechanisms? You are on a roll. Now you just need to start drawing your little map. It really reminds me that, you know, I am joined with the Holy Spirit in purpose, and that what I really want to do is perceive every experience from that purpose, that desire to know thyself, that willingness to accept the atonement for myself, that willingness to be only love, that is how I want to perceive every single experience. These stories pop up as symbols, and they do tend to be one of the ways that we receive guidance then, because we remember the story. So we're all kids at heart. So we're learning just like kids. I love you all, and I will be back tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Bye.